And so, did you just want me to say dispatches from the underground? Dispatches from the underground.
Dispatches from the underground.
With your host,
Joey Steele. Up to no good. We're good?
Question authority.
Dispatches from the underground.
Question everything.
Dispatches from the underground!
All right, welcome to Dispatch from the Underground. I'm your host, Joey Steele. Thanks for getting down with us. We are coming at you from the underground in New York City. That's where we are. This is what we do. Glad you could join us down here. I want to get right to it because we have a great episode that's jam-packed with good information. So I'm going to cut all the excessive and loquacious delights from my introduction today, as much as I enjoy them, and I'm sure you enjoy them too. And I'm just going to cut right to it. We have an amazing guest, Ev Gold, from an incredible band here in New York City, Cinema. They've done a ton of national tours, they've done a ton of international tours, and I'm sure going to be coming to wherever you are very soon. And they're putting out a new record. April 28th is getting released. Man Bites Dog. It's, from what I've heard of it so far, it's fantastic, and I can't wait to hear the rest of it. I haven't even heard the entire album yet, so I'm super excited about it being released April 28th. And we're going to talk about the album. We're going to talk about what everything they're doing. We're going to talk about how this album relates and compares to their previous stuff if you're a Cinema fan. And if you don't know them yet, I think they're the cutting edge, really, of music today, and maybe punk, maybe metal, however you want to categorize it. It's hard to categorize the cutting edge, but I think they're on the forefront of what good is being done in the music today. Black Flag has noticed that Greg Ginn took him on tour for 3 months with him, and a lot of other people are starting to recognize it too. And so I'm super excited about this new full length. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of it. We're going to be talking a little bit about their tours that they have planned and they're coming up. They're going to be in Europe at the beginning of May, and they're going to be there for a while. And then they're going to be doing a bunch of stuff on the East Coast, and I'm sure they're going to be having more shows in the future. Anyway, Ev's going to break it all down for us. So we're going to get right to it. I want to thank everybody who continues to listen to this podcast, and if you stick through the end, I'll let you know about some other shows we have coming up in the very near future here in New York City and everywhere else. So, but I'll let you know all that at the end of the show. Okay, so you stick around until you hit to fucking find that shit out. Let's cut to it. Here's Ev Gold from Cinema. Get down. Before we start this episode, I want to listen to a tune that Ev wanted to start this episode off with. Here's a tune. We don't play a lot of like mainstream stuff, and I don't know if I get to call the Dead Kennedys mainstream, but at this point, I guess in punk, this is about as mainstream as it gets. And it's an incredible song. And Ev wanted to start it off here because I think it's something that really unites a lot of the punks in our space and in our mentality. And despite the fact that we might have different sounds, I think our love for this song and this band unites a lot of us. So I think this was a really good pick. So here's a pick by Ev Gold. Here is Dead Kennedys' California, Uba Alice. That's my New York spin on Dead Kennedys classic, but California Uber Alice by the Dead Kennedys. Get down.
California, Uber Alice, 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 California, Uber Alice,
All right, Ev, what's up, brother? How you been, man?
Ah, Joey.
That's the sound of a man
Joey.
Who does not want to be here, Ev. I'm gonna tweak that sound and just make it be like, yeah, I'm so good. Yeah, everything's great. That's how it's going to come out when you hear this episode later. So
yeah, we got to apply a pedal to that, some sort of modulate that sound. Actually, I'm great.
Yeah, good.
I'll
cut the rest of that. No, I'm worried. That's editing. That's all good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but, good, man. And you should be great. Things are going fucking good for you guys all the time.
All the time.
It's nothing but a party for you.
It's just the rock star lifestyle and the party. It's never ending. It's like,
never ending.
Yeah, like Kiss said, you know, rock and roll all night and party every day.
Those guys never had a fucking job, man.
Oh my God. we can start off on a Kiss tangent now and it won't go well for Kiss fans. So let's just leave it where it is.
All right, okay. There is a great movie, by the way. We're going to talk about your love of film in a little bit. But there's a great movie that Gene Simmons plays a cross-dressing serial killer in.
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
No.
I'll fucking remember the name of that film in a minute.
Please.
I fucked it up.
Please.
We wrote a song about it in the will, something about Full House. I don't remember why. Oh, because one of the guys in Full House, the guy who married Rebecca Romijn, what's his name? Stamos.
Stamos.
He was in the movie, too. So he's like the good guy, and he fights Gene Simmons, who's a cross-dressing serial killer.
Holy! I mean, can I say shit? That's worth an expletive.
I think it was Never Too Young to Die. I think that's what it was called. It's a fucking good movie.
Okay,
check it out.
This has to be. I have to do the reconnaissance work on that.
That's
I got to get
closest
in with that.
Kiss is ever going to get to a day job is playing a cross-dresser. Okay, we're not gonna talk about that because we're gonna talk about a better band than Kiss today.
Well.
And that's Cinema.
Ooh, yes, now I'm happy to be here. Yes, yes. No, just to clarify things to everybody out there in podcast world, I am very happy to be here. I am Ev Gold. I'm in a band called Cinema. This is not the first time that I've tangled with Joey Steele on the Dispatches from the Underground podcast or interview series or whatever you'd want to call this.
We call it a laboratory.
We danced the dance back in fall of 2015.
God, that was a long time
ago.
Yeah,
and a lot has gone on, I think, for you and for us since. Right around when those episodes aired was right around when we had started to work on the new album, which is what I think we're going to touch base.
Fuck yeah, it's coming out. Yeah, it's coming out right when this album, right when this show airs is when the new album's dropping. So that's why we're doing this today.
Yes, 100%. My understanding, this is going to air sometime around mid to late April, and the record comes out April 28th, and it's called Man Bites Dog. It's our fourth full length. It's the second time that we've worked with Martin Beese. We returned to work with the same magical Knob Twiddler who did our 2014. Yeah, I mean, God, to deduce down, there's so many. I mean, Master Wizard, you know.
No, Knob Twiddler is great.
You know,
let's keep
like,
it there.
Yeah, I guess let's just keep it for what it is. He did twiddle the knobs.
There was knobs that were twiddled.
Yeah, in a very, very... very special way.
Well, let me ask you, how do you feel this album compares to the other ones? Because I think a lot of folks who listen to the episode are familiar with Cinema. They've seen you play around the country with Black Flag, and they love your tunes. How do you feel like this album, Man Bites Dog, compares to those other albums?
Interesting. To be entirely honest with you, after the last record that we made, 2014's A Night at the Fights, I was really happy with that one. I think that to come away from an experience where you create something and to be overall close to entirely happy is extremely rare. You know, you go back and you hear that one vocal, that one word, that one moment, and it's just, I think sometimes it's it's a magical vulnerability that's embarrassing to the creator, but might be endearing to the listener. Mm. I think sometimes when I cringe, maybe that might be one of the parts that the person listening likes. But we did come off the back of that record, which came out right at the end of the Black Flag tour that we were on. And we were very happy with that record and about how the record came out. So much so that we had said that we weren't going to make the next record, this one, with Martin. We felt like we really hit this great pocket, this great groove, you know, like, and it was right what we wanted. And there would have been too much of a proclivity to try to repeat that.
Yeah.
Because,
wow.
Yeah. So I know that I came away from the last process thinking, okay, we're not going to make the next one with Martin because that was just too good. Thank you, Martin. And Martin, if you're hearing this, thank you. The work that you've done with us has been...
Stop listening to the knob twiddlers.
Yeah.
He never made it to the fucking good shit.
He's like, fucking Ev. That's what I recall of Ev, a real curmudgeon type, real son of a bitch.
Fucking knobs on that guy, I'll tell you what.
We left that process and of making the last one, which you didn't ask about, but that kind of leads me into the answer.
Yeah,
here,
no, for sure.
With the idea that we were going to have to do something different for this new one, just process wise for Paul and I, because it almost felt like it's hard to explain. I mean, as much as you know, it would be nice for things to be nice and smooth and sweet. As an artist, sometimes the challenges and the different things we throw into the different kind of like tripped up. You know, things we throw into the spokes of our own bike, those sometimes can be some of the biggest inspiration. So it almost felt like we had a fixed hand. We had fish in a barrel waiting if we went back with Martin, and we might produce something that sounds similar. And that's one thing that we pretty much never want to do. We'd like to continue to grow and make music that's affected by who we are today and what we've been through and what we go through. Not so much everything that we've heard over the years try to emulate a sound, but more just like where our heads are at and what's coming out of us at the moment. So we decided, okay, we're not going to go back to Martin, and we're not going to use any old ideas that are laying around. So
that's a tough decision to call, yeah. Man. That's hard to say. You're not going to use any old riffs. And
yep. It was like, okay, this is all fresh. This is going to be new. It's all going to be fresh. So
you're a brave man.
We started to push and pull and come up with some interesting stuff that I definitely would think that some moments of it are 100% influenced by spending a lot of time on the road with Black Flag. And moreover, with Greg Ginn, the guitar player, we've done before the Black Flag stuff, we had done a lot of solo, a lot of tours with his solo acts, and just I've observed him play guitar just a few feet away from me hundreds of times now. It's couldn't help but really kind of open my mind and eyes to some different approaches that maybe I hadn't been taking on the guitar. So influence from there, and just I'd say, you know, like I said, influence from all over was swirling above us and waiting for us to tap into it. New influence, you know, so we decided to rip out the any of the old pages, start from fresh, start from new, and some of the new ideas are really kind of interesting us. And we started to think, okay, so what are we going to do if we aren't going to record with Martin? So we started to formulate some other plans, one of which was to go back and work with Don Zientara. He did our album Manic Children and the Slow Aggression from 2012. And Don has done Fugazi, Minor Threat, Bad Brains, Bikini Kill, Q and Not You, everything that's been on Discord, Don did. So it was kind of like, wow, we're choosing between amazing and off the chain, holy crap. You know, like, how can you really go wrong with either? So we had planned to be going to Don. And what happened was we said, you know what? Let's just sit down with Martin and talk with him about what could be for the next record. Because Martin's words to us after we made the first record was that he felt that if we come back to do some repeat business with him, that the next thing might even be something we're happier with. Mm. We were kind of just like, well, the last thing we did with him was so good, we're never going to top it, so we just can't even bother. But it was interesting because the relationship with Martin and us has gotten a chance to grow over the last 5 years that we've met him. We met him 5 years ago. The word met kind of jumped out. We met him 5 years ago when Hurricane Sandy destroyed a lot of the Brooklyn and New York coastal area in October of 2012. We met Martin by that grace of insanity, the hurricane came tearing through, destroyed our practice space, which happened to be three blocks away from his recording studio. So in the shared
Red Hook or what?
Gowanus.
Gowanus, even worse. Gowanus. Jesus, you guys got hit.
Yeah, Gowanus. We were right on the right on the canal itself. So you know, there was surge came out of the canal, 8 foot high surge of water, destroyed the back of the practice space. We met him as we were clearing our destroyed gear out of the practice space. Jesus. He was just casing his neighborhood.
He'd been in the rubble.
Yeah, he'd been recording. He's been recording there for over 35 years. So at the time, he was approaching about 30 years. So that's his neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, he was there when it was wild packs of dogs, from what I've heard, and gangs, like in, you know, the Warriors movie or some shit. So, you know, like street gangs, believe it or not. So anyway, we met Martin by chance, by fate, by whatever, by hurricane. And that was where things kind of began. And we've recorded with him. We've toured with him. We've become friendly with him. We've gotten to know him. He's gotten to know us. And
that's tough not to go back to that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And what it was we sat down with him and he really blew our mind. We expressed our worry and our fear about like getting all this material prepared and coming back and having the same approach. And he was like, well, why don't you guys, as oddly as it sounds, not prepare quite as much.
Wow.
Like cook the ideas up, but don't overbake them. We kind of came in on the previous record, like knowing how we wanted it to sound, having everything fleshed out, kind of the way you'd want to come in, totally prepared into a studio. I mean, that's what it's just kind of this innate, almost as a musician, feeling for both Paul and I to not want to waste a moment of time in the studio.
Especially for underground musicians, because you don't have the money to fucking like be working on how to tweak that riff or how to sing that different.
Exactly.
So so you got to come in with like, I know I'm going to say, I'm going to hold my breath for this long and this second.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that had some other producer who we had never worked with before, had they pitched idea to us, we would have just been like, okay, this meeting's over.
Yeah, for real.
Like, it's just not getting...
$60 an hour, fuck you, buddy.
It's like, we
work on that in the studio.
Yeah. So, but the thing that intrigued us was that we had known that even though we went into the recording of the last album with such a manicured plan, still Martin's fingerprints wound up on it because he's just a master in there. And then he'll hear and see and spot parts and pieces that you didn't know were there. Mm. So when he kind of laid down this breadcrumb trail or threw down the gauntlet, almost like, you know what? Come to me with an album that's 90% written instead of 100% written, or however it was that we understood what he was saying. It immediately piqued us and opened us up entirely to the thing that we had said we wouldn't do. We were like, okay, now Martin just showed us why he's Martin. Now we know why Swans and Sonic Youth and Afrika Bambaataa and Helmet and everybody, Iggy Pop, everybody's gone and worked with him, because that's not what I expected him to say. That's not, you know, and he doesn't do what's expected or what's to come next or what's going to please you. You know, when he was like, he almost like threw down, like I said, he threw down the gauntlet, like, okay, I know what you guys could do. You know what I can do here in the studio. How about the next record is even more of a collaborative effort, is essentially what he was saying. So we were like, you know what? We're coming back to you. You know, whatever insane assumptions we had, like, we made such a good record. First of all, that sounds crazy.
No, I don't think so. I think that's amazing.
As an artist, it's so rare to come away from a record that you're happy with. We were really happy with that one, and we almost, the one from 2014, we almost didn't want to, like, ruin or sully the memory or the work that we had done. We were just thinking, we'll just leave that as the one that we did with Martin. But he opened us up by basically throwing that misdirection at us of, like, well, come a little less prepared and we'll see what comes of it. And that opened up a lot of different doors for the way we just approached the entirety of the record. It helped us to, I think, edit a little better. We were probably 9 or 10 song ideas deep. And that's when we started to realize, okay, well, instead of killing ourselves at the last month or two of rehearsals we have before we record to make sure that we have these 9 or 10 songs ready, we kind of have that these 6 really close. Why don't we just, you know, pick 1 or 2 of the other 3 or 4 and work some more, but not kill ourselves to have everything just right, like Martin said, and go with a little bit less material. So we already, like, self-editing is so hard for us, for any artist, I think. And I think if I worked in the medium of, like, written word, I would probably be even more paralyzed slash insane and incensed by the whole editing process, you know, because it's just like you throw all this stuff out there, but sometimes you throw a little too much out there and you need to, like, kind of rein it back. I'm just talking about it in terms of, like, sometimes I personally can use a paragraph rather than a sentence in talking and speaking and writing. So
oh, yeah, me too. We're
when it comes to writing, when yeah. it comes to writing music, my cousin Paul is, in my opinion, one of the most talented drummers I've ever seen or been around and blessed to play with him. I'm not really in the business of saying, hey, man, don't play that part there. Like, I leave his editing to him. I trust his taste. I trust his vision. And he kind of leaves my editing to me, more or less. So if you're both editing your own pieces, you're thinking all your stuff is great. Yeah, so right off the bat, Martin opened us to thinking we should edit a bit. We should go with a little less to begin with. Okay. And you know what? If Martin is going to be such a big part of this collaboratively producing, maybe we should ask another guest on. Maybe we should consider having some outside musicians involved or musician involved. We've always prided ourselves very, very deeply and greatly on it's just the two of us, and everything you hear on the record is created by just the two of us. But talking to Martin the way we talked, it opened us up a bit more, and we asked, there's a saxophone. There's actually, I'd call him more of a wind specialist or a reed specialist, a gentleman named Matt Dario, who is in he's in the Klasmatics, he's in Paradox Trio, he's in a bunch of different bands.
Amazing performer and musician.
Amazing, and any wind instrument. And we have started a musical relationship with him back in 2013 that involves he, myself, and Paul performing in trio as full improv, wacko, just meet up, book the gig without any songs and play. And we had a handful of those experiences from 2013 up to present day, and they've always enriched us. And as much as it's nerve-wracking going in, we leave them feeling like we've elevated a bit of our game, for lack of a better terminology. So we said, you know what, let's ask Dario to be involved. Let's see if we could get him, you know, to come play on a song. And that turned into he plays on like three songs. And we actually had a couple of other ideas for different guests that we didn't get a chance to explore, but it's opened us even further to that idea moving forward for the next record, potentially, etc. So
let me ask this. I'm
yeah, please cut me off, because you asked me about how I feel about this album, and then I told you a story about recording the last one.
But I think it was necessary, because I think that's going to help frame people's ideas of what to expect in this album versus the last album. And I think that was a really crystal clear picture. And we're gonna take a break here in a second to listen to a tune. But before we do that, I do want to know this, and maybe other people aren't as interested as I am, but do you feel like you spent more time in the studio going into it with that mentality and knowing that you were 90% done versus 100% done? Do you feel like you spent more time in the studio recording this, or less time, same amount of time? I'm just curious.
I would say that, oddly enough, going in a little less prepared, but having the trust that was built with Martin allowed us to be even calmer. And I think also this is our second time working with Martin. We know the studio, we know the space, but that calmness made all the difference this time around, because we wound up knocking out the recording in just about the same amount of time, if not even a little bit less, than it took us to cut the record before, that where we knew every single moment. But I will say this, we spent a lot more time mixing this record.
Oh, okay.
That was what it was. I think the record before, and all the records previous to this one, when we come in with, like, we have the ideas, we have the songs, they are figured out, we are going to execute them, and then whoever it is that we're working with in producing, engineering, they are going to help us to make them sound as good as possible. That's that. This, we went in, we had our colors, our paints, our markers, all our, you know, whatever we were going to paint the picture with. We calmly went about arranging the ideas that we had and the songs that we had written. But that's where we kind of left extra time in the mixing area. And that was where Martin per se, got his collaborative fingers in.
It was mostly in the mix. Yeah. Not so much when you guys, he wasn't saying like, hey, maybe change that riff here.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm so glad you asked that question, because I'm sure to the to anyone's ears, if I'm saying that the producer's asking us to come in a little bit less prepared, it immediately skews to he'd be getting a little bit more hands in with it, telling us, well, do that part four times, do that part two times. Right. And that does sound like a plausible kind of that wouldn't
right,
be far off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't be far off from what I was just explaining.
Right.
And I'm not saying that situation's bad or good or anything like that. And we do trust Martin enough now that I would listen to his input with a keen ear if he did offer it in that way. But this kind of collaborating wasn't necessarily that. I will say there was one of the songs he did advise maybe we add an extra two measures before we went back into a verse. And I at first was like, what the fuck is he talking about? You know, and then we said, okay, mister. And we
slammed my face through the wall and be like, two what?
And we did. Yeah. And he was right. Yeah. And it did fit the song better. But that was only like one instance where it was him kind of being collaborative in a let's arrange the song sense. What he did more is kind of really apply, and I believe he applies this focus with no matter what project he's working on, and no matter what state in which the compositions were brought in, I believe he would apply this focus regardless. But the mixing was, you know, it was just a little bit longer, more drawn out, more chances taken, more... just more. That was kind of this rule happened. Like, we laid everything down, and then when it went time for mixing, it was like, okay, the rule is there's no rules. So it's not going to be about, well, I don't know if I'll be able to sing that part live if we double that. It was just like, you know what? This album is an artistic experience. It's almost an experiment of sorts for us. It's not so much about the you know, like the songs being perfectly polished and perfectly sequenced, etc. Although we did take painstaking effort to sequence it correctly, and we did work the sections that we worked out over and over to get them refined. But this is more. It feels more to me like this album is an overall artistic statement more than just a group of really good songs.
Sounds to me liberating. Like, it sounds to me like you're freer in this album to explore crazier places. And when I listen to you guys, you take me, you know, someone who's involved in music, and that's really all I ever do is listen to music and see bands. You take musicians to places where, like, what the fuck is that? I never thought about music like that. You take us to these liberating places, and it sounds like you're pushing those limits even more because you were in this very liberating space. I can't wait to hear the whole album, because that sounds magical. I mean, it sounds really refreshing the way you talk about it.
Thank you. Thank you. This entire recording process was very refreshing. I don't know. I know we were about to go to a break, but something did happen because we're talking about this all as this really calm, refreshing recording process.
It's a little too calm for me. But yeah.
Let me just, you know, I mean, and if you're a fan or supporter or a friend or you know of the band, or you're somewhat intimate with us, you might know that this happened during the recording. I mean, being that Mr. Steele sitting in front of me is a supporter of us and all types of music, although he is currently very much ensconced in his endeavors with All Torn Up as they continue to move from regional to national to everything that they're doing. I don't think that you remember this, so I'm going to throw this pearl out there.
Oh, fuck. Did I do something fucked up?
No. This isn't so much something you did.
Okay.
Although we don't know who did it. It's still a caper.
Okay. Wait. 1 second. Before we get into the story, I want to take a little break, and I want to listen to a tune from this new album that's coming out April 28th, Man Bites Dog, from Cinema. So, Ev, what tune do you want to listen to right now?
Let's go with Taxi Driver. That's it's the song that starts off side B of the record. It is it's pretty hard to explain. I think we should just let the music do the talking. It was definitely one of the earlier ideas that that came to the forefront as we ripped the page out of the notebook and said we're going to start fresh. This is one of the ones that kind of appeared and got the ball rolling, I think.
So here's the beginning. Here's the first nugget of Man Bites Dog. So here's Taxi Driver by Cinema Cinema. Going to be out April 28th. Get down.
Yeah.
So there was a very calm nature in the recording, and there was this great trust, as I just explained, this trust between us and Martin and the collaboration, and all these things are great and good and fine and beautiful. But something actually pretty foul and insane and fucked up happened right in the midst, in the beginning of the recording, which also kind of, I think, added a shade of, well, fuck it. No matter what, nothing will stop us. Let's move forward to the recording. And that was, we go in to cut the record, and we spend the first day, and we cut a bunch of stuff, and it feels really good. Okay, great. Go home. We head back in the next day. Now, this was over. No. We started the recording over the course of a weekend. So the initial sessions were going to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just to blast out three big sessions. And then I don't recall what the next sessions were, but I could tell you we went in on a Friday night with the plans to record all weekend. So we go in on Friday night. We cut some stuff. It's sounding really good. The primary purpose is to get the stuff to have Martin feel like the room is sounding good, and maybe we come away with a rough take of like one or two tracks of the songs.
Yeah.
So we go and do that Friday, and it's beautiful. So, of course, being that we're going to be working all weekend, all of our gear is there, set up. Yeah, so we return on Saturday, and now Saturday we're feeling even better. Saturday we are murdering it. We do a lot of the work that winds up as the record on Saturday, a lot of the bass tracks.
God
so,
damn it, Ev, get to the point of the story.
Yeah,
you're
here
fucking killing me.
It comes. So we finish work on Saturday night. We had been there all day into the night. It isn't like we were working till 3 a.m. blowing rails. Then we got the Jägermeister. No. Now, this isn't fucking joke around playtime. Like, we were diligently, clear-headedly giving everything we had all day. That's the way we happened to do our stuff. And we had been in for a good handful of hours. It wasn't some marathon 20-hour session. It was like the day was done, and we were all happy with the day being done. We put all our instruments down, and we went off to head home with the plans to return the following day, Sunday, to continue to track. And on Sunday, Matt Dario, who I mentioned, was going to be coming to blow some horn with us, do some saxophone stuff. So the Sunday session was going to be just as important as the Saturday or the Friday or any session when you're creating. So leave Martin's studio Saturday night about 10:30, 11 o'clock, head home. At this point in time, this is during the 2015 World Series playoff run, not to reintroduce baseball as it seems to be a motif anytime I'm on Joey's podcast, but I'm just saying, like, at this point in time in the world, both Paul and I are Met fans, New York Met fans, and the rare, insane instance was happening where the Mets became good and were making the postseason and World Series. We're talking about October of 2015, okay? So set the stage. I'm at the happiest I could possibly be, a lot happier than I was when we started this podcast, as I sounded kind of sullen. I am jumping for joy at the fact that Paul and I are getting a chance to make our music with Martin. We have such a relationship with Martin that we really feel comfortable, everything's sounding good, and in the outside world, the Mets are in the fucking World Series. I mean, everything's going correctly. So, leave the studio, head home. I go to sleep, and I'm sleeping the sleep of the just. I'm like sleeping the sound sleep of the just. I am out like a light. And I didn't know this. I didn't know this until the 10th or 11th time the phone was buzzing next to me.
Fuck.
But my phone was rattling on my nightstand next to me. Lauren, my girlfriend, my domestic partner, the love of my life, the individual who does all the artwork for all of our releases and all of our merch, she taps me and she's like, Ev, your phone's been buzzing for the last 20 minutes, and now this is at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So I grab the phone, I take a look, and there's 10 missed calls from Martin.
Oh fuck!
So I say to myself, in one quick hot second, I try to convince myself that of one of two things. It's either A, and this is thinking on the bright side, Martin has been listening to these tracks we laid down, and he's so excited, he cannot wait till tomorrow to check in with me. He's got to tell me about the great work that Paul and I did right now. He must be crazed by it. Oh my God, he called 10 times. That's what I'm hoping, although that sounds pretty ridiculous. Then what I'm thinking as the B-side to that blind hope is he must have had some sort of a crash with his hard drive at the studio, and everything we recorded must be wiped. But Paul and I are just getting hot.
Yeah,
I bet you we could go in tomorrow and do everything we need. So I had those two quick thoughts. One, to entertain myself with a little comedy, as
You're
I've
positive
done
on
my
both
whole,
sides.
Yeah, I tried to have a positive spin on both sides. So
I would have immediately started crying and just been like, I'm not calling him back. There's nothing I can do.
Well, now we get to the reveal. And everybody who already knows the story, I'm sorry I dragged it out so long, but this is how the story went. I call Martin back, and the Martin I get answering the phone is a different Martin than any Martin I had dealt with before. And this is like a dude, I've been on tour with Martin where we had to do an 11-hour drive from Graz, Austria to Amriswil, Switzerland overnight on the most narrow road I've ever seen. The entire Sprinter van had everyone asleep except for Martin and I in the front, and we came real close to driving off that road.
Holy fuck.
And like I've shared those kind of moments with Martin, and Martin has always remained a very buoyant spirit. Like nothing sways him or rocks him. He's really calm and centered. So when I called him, I got, instead of getting that Martin, I got, "Hey, Ev." And I was like, "Oh, wow. Oh, no. This doesn't sound like the calm and centered Martin." And I'm like, "Hey, Martin, man, what's going on? It's fucking 2 o'clock in the morning. I hope everything's okay with you. Is everything okay?" I might not have been that uppity. But I tried to just be like, "Hey, man, how you doing? What the fuck are you calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning for? Not that I wouldn't welcome a call from you at any time, but what's up?" He's like, "There was a break-in."
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "All the guitars were stolen."
Oh, my God.
And I was like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "Ev, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And I was like, "Martin, are you okay?" Because Martin has recorded in that studio for 35 years, and he lives in the same structure.
Fuck.
He lives in an apartment type scenario that's above the studio. I won't get too deep into his living quarters and details. That's his business. He lives in that building. So my immediately thought,
he was okay.
Yeah. My thought was like, "Fuck guitars. Like, did they harm you in any way for this?" He's like, "I'm okay, but they stole the guitars." amongst a few other pieces, you know, I mean, but the thing that was ringing so loud was the word guitars.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, I met Martin with Paul because of Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, yeah.
We were victims in such a way with Hurricane Sandy that 85 to 90% of our gear was destroyed. The only stuff that wasn't destroyed for me were these three guitars.
Oh, my God. You had all three of them there?
All three of them.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
These are the best ones.
These are the ones.
You record your album with it. This is it. These are your...
These are the ones.
These are the ones who don't leave the house.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you know, as you've seen us and you know that what we do, and we're just two people. So it's not like I'm not Mr. Gearhead. Like, you know, there was Seymour Duncan blackface pickups and there was a whammy floating Zhaji Zhuji. I'm not going to get into wasting time. I'm just going to tell you that the guitars were modified so they would sound big, thick, and with heavy bottom bass-like stuff.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a bass player in the band. Paul and I make all the sounds, just Paul and I. So, yes, I can grab a guitar off any rack and plug it into my stuff and we can play. But if it's a guitar I bought, which of course those were guitars that I bought, then I've had them modified in some way as I've gone from playing just regular guitar to this Frankenstein wacko guitar bass at the same time thing that I do with Paul. So again, it's not like they were so modified, like I had an extra neck built and there was a drop down, there was a back hatch. No, it's just like there was a lot of things that were done. I mean, it's not over the moon, you know, it's not like, I know there's a story of like, I think Sonic Youth's had all their guitars stolen years and years ago and they use lots of different tunings and all this different antique stuff. It's not so much that, but they weren't just regular off-the-rack guitars.
This isn't a guitar robbery. This is a fucking artistic... This thing is a fucking gem.
They're
this
my instruments. Yeah, they're my tools.
This is a gem. This thing is not normal. You can't just find this. You got to make this.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so, you know...
I mean, it's bad if it's a guitar, but, you know, on top of that, it's something special.
And the thing that compounds the whole thing is that, A, I have to make sure that, you know, I'm totally level-headed and chill with Martin, because the main thing is that Martin suffered a break-in where he lives and works.
Right.
You know, if my guitars were part of the end result, as long as he's okay, that's cool. But then I have to face, okay, I'm supposed to be back in that studio in 12 hours to record. Oh, and in 11 days, we leave for Europe for a 14-day tour. So now I have no guitars. I have recording in 12 hours. I have a 14-date European tour that starts in 11 days or some number like that. And the main number that's buzzing in my head is zero guitars. So in the midst of recording this album, the guitars were stolen. I showed up the next day, Martin rifled through a closet and he pulled out a ESP copy Stratocaster with strings on it that had they were as yellow as an Englishman's teeth.
Oh, jeez.
But we made it work. And actually, that guitar is on a good handful of songs on the record. And I went ahead and went on that tour with Paul, and someone lent me a guitar, and people stepped up every single spot along the way and kept us going. And there was a GoFundMe that was set up by Lauren, and many, many, many people contributed. Any of you that might be listening to this, if you've gotten this far into my winding rabbit hole of insanity, I just want to say thank you. The love that one feels in this game of music is, it's oftentimes, it could be rare. To really feel the community rise up and help out. But when it does happen, oh, wow. You talk about, like, you know, you can beat yourself up over, like, oh, have we played enough shows? Do enough people know about us? Have we done all these things? But then you have your guitar stolen, yeah, and a bunch of strangers band together, or, you know, strangers and friends band together and contribute money, which is so hard to come by, which is so personal of an object, to you, for you to keep your, you know, ship at sea. You know, I mean, it was so touching. I was able to, you know, I mean, I haven't replaced all three, but, you know, I learned that I can make it through with one, and I will make it through with one as long as I have to until I get a second and a third, et cetera. I learned a lot from the whole process. I didn't just learn I could make it through with one. That sounded a little idiotic. But
I don't think so. I mean, you know, you were way more calm than I would have been at every single moment of this shit. I would have just fucking broken every wall and never would have finished that album. Not because I wouldn't have finished the album, because Martin would have been like, I'm not working with this psycho. Like, what the fuck did you just say to me?
Yeah.
Like, my compassion for Martin would have been outweighed by my insanity. I mean, you're calm. You're calm, dude. You're really level-headed, and that was really healthy. I mean, sounds like you grew through the process, and even though you lost a lot, it sounds like you gained, as you know, not as much as you lost, but you gained through it. That's tough.
Yeah, I definitely feel that's part of, to me at least, why I feel this record... now that it's coming out, I feel there's something about this record that's special. I know that sounds weird, or maybe it doesn't sound weird. And of course, keep in mind out there, if you're not your own biggest fan, folks, then you better wake up to the fact that you got no fans.
Yeah,
so I can say to myself, you know, like, if you're going to wait around for someone else to be like, this is your best work, you're going to be waiting. I mean, at least with my analytical ear pressed to the stereo speakers, and with all the run up that we're in the middle of in getting ready to have this record come out and go on the tour, there just feels like there's something special about it. I'm really excited about it. I love what the end result sounds like. And Martin played a great big part in it. Fred Kevorkian mastered it. He mastered the last record also. We love Fred. He is the man. We are going to be playing all this material all over the place coming up.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Europe for a second.
Yeah,
The release of the album, Man Bites Dog, right?
Yes.
Comes out the 28th. And when do you guys head out to Europe to do a tour?
Well,
this is your third tour in Europe?
This is our fifth.
Oh, Jesus. I fucked up. All right,
no,
fifth
it's,
tour in Europe.
Okay. Yeah, it's all
wow,
good.
Wow, that's
it's,
amazing.
It's all good.
It's crazy.
We are very blessed. I have to, you know, as you can tell, and anyone who's spoken to me or any of your listeners, I have to kind of, if I'm going to answer the question, I have to start from like 10 feet back and run at the question. Europe, the door to Europe opened. Martin helped to open that door to Europe for us. And that's how it's kind of gone. We met him because that hurricane in 2012, and that was the beginning of a relationship. And that relationship has seen us do a lot of different things, not just recording, but touring. Some kind of comfortable feeling existed between us and Martin very early on. It might be because we bonded over a natural disaster that affected us. It wasn't so much like we were trying to, like, cold call, like, hey, man, so we want to work with you. Or we were trying to penetrate some kind of a circle, like, oh, we got to be a band that works for them because we're weird or some shit. It happened. And like so many beautiful things that seem to reveal themselves to be even deeper and broader over time. It happened without a plan. It happened like because fate wanted it to. So In that first year, we did a lot of shows with Martin around Brooklyn, around this kind of area, and the idea was just thrown out there that he was going to be going to Europe, and it would be cool to team up, maybe for him to have an opening band for Europe. So we went with him for the first time in 2013, and that was the beginning of the Europe, prying open the clam and seeing the pearl inside of Europe. That was the beginning in 2013, and we thank Martin specifically. He brought us over. It was 2.5 weeks. We did 5 countries, and we did our best to – we played every single show like it was our last, because we do that for every show, no matter what. So that tends to speak to people if they're there and they care. But not just that, we also made sure to – and this is, I recommend this to any band that's going to do any touring and any traveling. We made sure to, you know, be kind, respectful, and kind of ingrain ourselves a bit in the fabric that goes beyond the playing part. But like, who booked this tonight? Who runs this place? Oh, where this crazy band? Oh, you liked that? We'd love to come back to Europe again one day. You know, that kind of a thing was said for 2.5 weeks that first time in 2013. So we kind of amassed a little bit of a running start there, and that coupled with a couple of different booking agents that book Martin over there actually booking those shows, and they didn't know who Cinema was, but they came to see Martin, and then they saw us, and then they were very open to helping us in the future. So that kind of started things. And then when we came back from that tour of Europe, within the next few months was when we went on the Black Flag tour all across America. So once we did that and we came off that, then we hit back a bunch of those booking people in Europe, and they remembered that they dug the wacko Jacko insanity that we do because they saw us. They also remembered that they saw us because Martin brought us over, and Martin is like a fucking god over there. And then they saw that we had just toured with Black Flag, and boom, the door kind of opened, which is kind of helpful for us, as I found in Europe so far. It's really about the experience and the art and the exchange. It's not about anything but that. So they just have a little bit broader of maybe a broader attention span for shit that's entirely fucking wacko, and they just have a deep appreciation for all. It's not, there isn't as much as of a cynical approach. Like, you could go online and I'm not just, you know, not just weird new wacko bands like us, but like old bands that don't have any career anywhere can go there. There's just, and that's not, that's just, there's an appreciation for the art form itself, for music that hasn't been diminished by how quick can I go to this and say I was there and leave, or how, you know, I don't even want to download this, I'll just stream it, you know, like the whole America. It's like in America they don't, it's like, it's now they won't buy product, okay, now they won't even click on a download, but streaming is booming. It's like, okay, you idiots, streaming is booming, so that's great, but all it means is that all the generation coming up has no idea about the process of actually possessing something that is of connection to the artists that they're enjoying. Like, the buying process is gone. So I don't care that streaming is up. It just means that for all of us musicians who grew up coveting the works of artists that we love and going on these crazy goose chases to record stores and finding holy grails of albums that we never thought we'd find, that shit's way dead.
I mean, even when people are like, hey, what song are you listening to? I'm like, I'm not even sure the song I've listened to 1,000 times because I've never heard this song outside the context of this album, because I've only listened to the entire album, because I can't do a playlist. Like, if I'm going to listen to Helmet song, I'm going to listen to the entire fucking album.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fucking cut. Yeah. I mean, you may as well be on a tape. I can't handle that.
I
don't get streaming. No offense to everyone who's streaming our episode, thank you very much, but I don't understand what you're doing, basically.
I'm with you entirely. I'm just not a digital guy. I'm just not a digital guy. It doesn't mean that I can't see it for its the convenience. I have a phone. I can dial up YouTube and stream whatever I want. I mean, the sound quality can be at the mercy of whoever the hell uploaded it. You know, I mean, no one is getting any credit in any way, but I'm enjoying it on the go. Sure, I see that. But for me at home, I'm a hard copy guy at home. I have an old school stereo, the one that I bought with paper route money when I was 18. I've just enhanced it over the years. You know, cassette, vinyl, dual CD player, tuner. Like, it's old and it's wacko and I love it. And that's where I do all my listening. Even when we left the mastering session of the new album, Fred Kevorkian, the mastering dude, was like, well, at this point, I just send, threads or stems or whatever it was to these wave files, and I was just like,
send it in the mail.
I'm like, at this point, Mr. Kevorkian, I'm going to need a compact disc. So I, you know, and he's like, Ev, you're one of the only ones. And boom, you know.
Everything's just so, you know, ephemeral. It's just like nothing lasts. It's like it's just like a speck and then it's gone.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was when I got the 80 gig iPod in 2007 and I filled it with all the music possible, more music than I could ever listen to that was ripped off all the different illegal sites that all my different friends had. And then that 80 gig iPod just died one day. And I had relied on it so much. And that's when I was like, oh, wait. If I can't touch it, if I can't hold it, if I can't see it, it's not real. You know that, Ev.
No way.
You know, so why am I supposed to be fooled by this new illusion of digital music when my iPod could break and if I don't have it backed up, then I have to rebuy this or re-go through all it. No, I have all the music on my shelf. But to get back to to Europe, no, don't be sorry. We were supposed to take a break 20 minutes ago. This is turning into the, there'll be three installments of this
interview. I got it
all
figured out. Don't worry.
But anyway, so... yes, the album comes out April 28th, and we will be leaving to go to Europe May 3rd. It just so happens this time around, we are working with record labels on this release. Not Polygram, not Polydor, not Mercury, not, you know, Gary Geffen isn't like signing my rent checks.
No offense to all of them. They can sign all torn up checks all fucking day. Just let me know. Give me a call, fellas. It's all good. We love you over here.
But oh, please don't take my grandstanding integrity. Please, Gary Geffen and Peter Polygram. I'll take the same deal as Joey if you guys do show up.
10% less, maybe, fellas. Yeah, like they listen to Dispatches. Look, if they're listening to Dispatches, they fucked up a bunch of other ways. So put the fucking podcast out, fellas.
Oh, Christ.
Where are you guys going to be when you're over there?
Okay, yeah.
Fucked it up. I'll delete all that.
Let them deal. I mentioned that we worked with working with some labels, and I also kind of qualified it or disqualified it so people don't hear it as like, we're on a label now. Like, I don't want anything to sound gloat-like, you know, like we're just normal people. We do art because we have to. It burns inside of us, and we will do it no matter what platform. That's just how it's going to be, so get fucking used to it, whether there's a label or there isn't. Just so happens that there are. There is the main label. Is a UK label called Labelship. They wound up seeing one of our shows in Hamburg in 2015.
Hamburg. All right.
Yeah. And a love affair kind of started there. That was right around the time. That was literally the tour that we went on 10 days after the guitars got stolen. Mm. That was the tour. So we were in the process of recording back home. And on that tour, on the third or fourth night, this dude from Labelship was at the show. And
that shit, by the way, people listening in, that shit does not fucking happen in the real world. It only happens to cinema. There's not going to be a label at your show. You're not going to. This is not like, you know, Empire Records or something like that. Like, that shit does not happen. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's
that's wild. Like, he's in the audience. He's like, well, I happen to be in a label, and let me tell you what, guys, I'd be interested in a new album. Well, we just happen to have an album that we just finished recording.
That's
fucking amazing.
That's the story. You just told it.
That's
you
amazing.
Know? And I think it was just one of those things that if you...
Cinema. We're going to see that in the movie.
Yeah, that'll be in the movie, for sure.
Yeah.
If you keep at it, all the stuff's going to happen. That's just not going to happen in any way, shape, or form like you envisioned it. Yeah. That's what we're finding. You're going to get you're going to have your childhood favorite band of all time, Black Flag. They're going to ask you on a tour. You're going to get all your guitars stolen. Oh, yeah, that's going to happen, too. You're going to get all your gear destroyed. But you're going to get a chance to have this door open to Europe, and you're going to work with this great producer. But you're going to quit your day job to do that Black Flag tour, and then you're going to struggle when you come back, and you're going to crawl on your belly. Boy, you know, like all those things will happen. Just keep at it, everybody. Yeah. But ultimately, the record will come out April 28th, and we'll leave for Europe on May 3rd. A lot of the focus of the shows is in Germany, as the distributor that puts the Labelship's records out. They have a stronghold in that kind of EU area. A lot of stuff in Germany. So this tour specifically. Is going to focus on Germany, Austria, Prague, Czech Republic, and Hungary. And I'm excited to be going to Budapest. I have some Hungarian blood, so We got a chance to do Poland a couple of tours ago, and I also have a little bit of Polish blood. That might be why you know, I'm always stubbing my toe and doing stuff like fun. That.
Don't say that in this neighborhood.
Well, we are in the pocket of it. Yeah. Oh, these are my people. Yeah. Hello.
No jokes here, fellas. Keep going.
But anyway, it's going to be 4 or 5 countries over a little bit less than a 2-week run. Right after the record comes out, and we'll be running around Europe and doing all that. And then we come back. And then it's going to be, it was supposed to be every moment we could fill in May, for the rest of May and for all of June. But now, as I started to hint at this with you earlier, Joey, before we turned on the recording apparatus, now it's kind of like it's just, as we almost envisioned it, it's spreading beyond the lines. Like, it was going to be like, well, the record will come out April 28th. We'll do this big tour in May. Then we'll do more dates in May. And then more in June. Then we're going to rest in July. And it's like, well, no. Now there's dates in July. And we might rest a little in August. But it seems like part of this whole thing and working with the record labels who are willing to, you know, go ahead and make this great looking product for us to go around and play. The only way anyone's going to buy it is if they buy it from us at a gig.
Yeah. That's...
You know, I mean, it'll be in, of course, it's in stores there in Europe, etc., and people could buy it online, etc., but we know how it works in this day and age. You have to be a traveling salesman, and this is your convention, is the show. So we at first were looking at it like, well, we're going to do about 25 shows, then we'll take a break. And now it's like, we're just booking. We're going to Europe, to start. We're coming back. And through May, June, and July, it's going to be scattered East Coast. There's already Rhode Island's booked, Massachusetts booked, Connecticut's booked, Pennsylvania, 2 different dates there. There's a Brooklyn and a Queens date booked. There's a D.C. date booked and a Virginia date booked. All these will be announced probably by the time this airs or sometime soon. Or we might announce the EU dates first and then the American dates when we come back. But yeah, it's going to be EU and East Coast to start. And then we are going to take a breath at some point this summer. Not that we want to not play, but we're going to have to take a breath and just, kind of get on our haunches for a second and observe what we've done and see what's coming our way and what's next. But I can speak to the specific knowledge of there is works, as the label is a UK-based label. And with all our travels, we haven't played in the UK yet. So it looks like in the fall, and now we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but we've already been talking about it. So it looks like in the fall there's going to be another international thing that focuses just on UK dates. If it's not a long, big, drawn-out thing, it might just be a handful, but just so we could kind of kick that fucking door down and show them what's up there as well.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Well, you guys are killing it. There's a ton of all these shows will be, I'll post them on Dispatches, so if you guys want to go to our Facebook page and find us there, or you can make sure you stay in touch with Cinema on their Facebook page as well. I'm sure they're all going to be up there. Tons of shows coming up. Most of the May, June, July, August shows, the June, July, August shows are going to be East Coast, or?
Yeah, I could say that undoubtedly, the stuff that's in America will definitely be East Coast stuff. We're kind of pulling the slingshot back and aiming at the further out areas, but being that we're married into this European kind of dance and excursion at the front part of the touring, we aren't going to throw ourselves out into the middle of the country or the west coast of the country just yet.
We have a lot of west coast listeners, so hopefully when they listen to this, they might want to hear some cinema. So is there plans in the future for the left coast coming up?
100%. All right, 100%. Cool. Just as well as there's talk of the UK, which seems to be pretty firm for the fall, there's undoubtedly, there's already a route that we've already started to sniff around, and we've come really close to just wanting to connect the dots, but we're waiting. Next January, which obviously is still 8 months from now, but that'll be the 10-year anniversary that Paul and I have been performing as a duo, as Cinema. So we've kind of seem to have a lot of stuff to chew in our mouth already for this year. And it looks like if we don't get a chance to do the West Coast during this year, it'll be like the, it might be the 10-year anniversary blast, might be an insane West Coast run that goes SoCal, NoCal, and Oregon and Seattle. And maybe Vancouver. We've been really wanting to get together. Ron Reyes, singer from second singer of Black Flag and then singer of Black Flag in the 2013 reunion, and all around amazing, awesome dude, Ron Reyes. We've kind of kicked around the idea of getting up to Vancouver where he is and doing a show or two with him. So yeah, West Coast, if there's some left Coast, West Coast listeners, we did see you in May of 2014. You will see us again before May of 2018. 4 years, but sometimes you got to wait a long time to get your ass handed to you.
Last thing, Ev, can you just tell us when this album does come out, April 28th, which is slightly after this podcast is released, where can people pick up the album at? Where's the best place to go? Is it your Bandcamp page? Where's the best place to pick it up?
Yeah, you can go ahead at the Bandcamp page, as that has been a platform that I think it really has grown in our community, Joe, like sure. yours and mine, and you know, like I think once Discord put their entire discography on Bandcamp in this past December, and then also Bandcamp went ahead in February and like took yep. a whole day's worth of their download money and gave it to the ACLU yep. to try to fight this fucking insanity. So I think Bandcamp really over the last handful of months kind of like perked their head up to like, we're not just a good platform for DIY artists, but we're a real fucking platform. So yep. CinemaCinema.bandcamp.com. You can visit that, and the vinyl, the CD, the cassettes, the digital, it's all available there. That might be the easiest way to point you. Instead of, you know, washing you with all the other, obviously you could go to iTunes. You can go to labelship.com or labelship.de.
That's your label. So that's a good place to go to.
Yeah, yeah. If you go to labelship.com, or I mean, it's, yeah, I believe it's labelship.com. It was labelship.de. I think if you go to either one, it rolls over to the other. But that's where you can get info on the label. They have a lot of other really great, interesting outside stuff. It's not just a hard, heavy, avant metal punk label by any means. It's all over the fucking map. Mm. Direct, simple, easy, cinemacinema.bandcamp.com. Cool. You can go there, you can get the old music, or you can get the brand new music.
All right, April 28th, Man Bites Dog, Cinema Cinema. Make sure you get it, motherfuckers. See you out there in fucking Europe, brother. Hope you're following right after you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get down. Let's listen to another tune. I want to listen to another tune from the new album that Cinema Cinema is going to be putting out. This is a tune off their new album. It's going to be released April 28th, called Man Bites Dog. It's called Digital Clockwork Orange. So this is Cinema Cinema. Get down. We'll be right back. All right, that's the end of the episode. I want to thank Ev Gold again from Cinema Cinema for coming on the show today and talking about his new album and talking about all the great stories he had from tours in the past and some advice and everything. He's just a gem. The man is a gem. I know he's gold, so he's an element or whatever, but let's not get into the nitty-gritty, me motherfuckers. He's a gem to me in my heart. And Cinema Cinema is an incredible band. So make sure you guys check out that new album, Man Bites Dog. It's going to be released April 28th, which is just after this podcast airs. And you can get it on their Bandcamp page, which Ev mentioned. And I'm sure you can get it on the record label and everything else. So just check out Cinema Cinema. Go get down with them on Facebook and all of our social media as well. Speaking of social media, make sure you get down with all the stuff we're doing here at Dispatch from the Underground. Follow us on Facebook. Dig us on Twitter. We're always posting bullshit on Twitter, so make sure you stay up with us on Twitter. Also, there's a lot of shows going on. Dispatches isn't doing the shows, but a bunch of my bands are playing here in New York City and actually in Europe in the very near future. So we're doing a wedding show just after this airs. April 28th, the day that Cinema Cinema's album comes out, we're doing my wedding show. I'm getting married to a wonderful woman named Christine, and we're doing a show here in New York City. It's absolutely free. A bunch of my bands are going to be playing. All Torn Up is going to be playing. Scatineros from here in New York City is going to be playing, and an incredible reggae band from right here in New York City. Our good friends in the Far East are going to be playing that show too. It's totally free. It starts at 7. It ends early at 11 o'clock, but it's all free. So get there on time and let's have a good night. It's my wedding, so let's fucking party. That's April 28th. We got some other shows going on in May. I think it's May 28th as well. That's fucking kind of weird, actually. May 28th, we're going to be playing, All Torn Up's going to be playing with our good friends in Loud Armada from Chicago, Disaster Strikes in Boston, and Tulsa Doom from right here in New York City and from Philadelphia. We're going to be playing with them at St. Vitus. That's going to be an incredible show. June 29th, we're playing, All Torn Up is playing with Conflict. Scenic Presents is doing that show. And also in June 18th, we are doing Punk Island again. This will be our 10th year for Punk Island. It's going to be a fucking great time. Srima, my band Srima, is going to be playing that show. If you haven't seen us yet, you're going to have a great time. It's going to be a fucking really good show. Also, we're going to have, you know, around 100 bands playing, all free, all ages. Brooklyn Transcore has a fantastic stage. Hoosatron stage is going to be a blast. We're going to have at least seven stages doing fantastic music all for free all day. So make sure you guys get down with Punk Island on all the social media pages too. Tons of stuff going on. A lot of things to be excited about right here in New York City. But I don't want to leave the rest of the world out. For people who are listening to this and listening to Cinema Cinema talk about their European tour, I do want to say that All Torn Up is going to be touring with Leftover Crack this summer in July and August. In Europe, and we're doing a bunch of tour dates in a lot of the same cities that Cinema Cinema is going to be playing, and we're also playing Rebellion Festival in the UK, in Blackpool, UK, so a lot of things to be excited about. We're going to be coming to see y'all very soon, and I'm super excited. Make sure y'all stay up with Dispatches, stay down with us on social media, give us a fucking like, do a little rating on iTunes. It's a big help if you have the time, and obviously go to dispatchfromtheunderground.com if you want to leave a donation, subscribe, and do some of the merch stuff that we have there. Otherwise, we'll see y'all next time. Till then, get down.